Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max, News Radio 830 WCCO. Fun day to talk sports always in the fall. There's just so many things going on. Boston leads Houston 3-2 right now in the seventh inning. We'll keep you updated. Pete Najarian knows a lot about a lot of different sports, and we're going to go over all three levels of college football and even a little high school here tonight because it's always fun to visit with him. Pete, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, it's always fun, Maxie. I love it.
Did you get up to that St. Thomas game?
You know, I'd love to tell you I did. I actually was at a really great thing out in Las Vegas. I was at a place that these guys put on an event called Traders for a Cause. Otherwise, I'd have been there. But this event is a great event where all the money that is brought in over a three-day period, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all of that goes to whatever charity those that were the speakers, instead of getting payment, the payment goes in the form of a donation to that charity. So, really, really great event. Just shows you that even Wall Street has a heart once in a while, and we were happy to be a part of that. And I had a great time out there. But I would love to have been there, Maxie. I'm telling you, it was it sounded like an unbelievable afternoon.
Yeah, for sure. And you've watched St. John's with your son going there. You've watched him a few times this year, and you've come away pretty impressed, right?
Oh my goodness! I got to tell you, I can't recall if I was talking to you about this or Dave Lee, but I was talking to somebody over at TCO not long ago, and. And I was saying, you know, I'm watching the St. John's football team out there on multiple games so far this year. And I can tell you, there are maybe five players on the St. John's team who could very easily be playing in the Big Ten right now. Not just for the Gophers, but for anybody in the Big Ten. And when you've got that kind of quality, and I think the same thing is true of St. Thomas, but I haven't had a chance to watch them in person. And unfortunately, last year I was at that huge game that was at Target Field. But this year I wasn't able to make the game up there in Collegeville. I would have loved to have been there because I know about the atmosphere. I know all of what was going on in the backdrop, too, of course, with Coach passing away.
Yeah.
And just all the sentimental part of that and what a great mentor he was to so many people. And I think that really did play a part in this, Maxie. I think that was just one more thing just to add on to a great rivalry to give St. John's a little bit of an edge.
Did you get to meet Coach Gilardi ever over the years?
I did get a chance to meet him. Matter of fact, I had two brothers who played against him when they were at Gustavus.
Sure, yeah.
I know you're an MIAC guy yourself at Hamlet, so just a wonderful person. I never played for him. I never had the opportunity. I talked to many people who have played for him, and you never go away from anybody saying, I've never heard a bad word spoken. And that says a lot because some guys can be frustrated. Maybe they didn't get the time they wanted. Maybe they thought they deserved more. But I think the players have always bought in. And talk about a guy who was way ahead of his time, right, Maxie? I mean,
yeah.
What's everybody doing now in college football, pro football, and even maybe
as don't hit, right?
They don't hit. They limit the time at practice. They make it a mental game. And you know, it's amazing that he was doing this in the 70s and there maybe back in the 60s, but for sure in the 70s and 80s and all the way until he retired. Just a phenomenal guy who just understood the fundamentals of football and understood that, you know, at the Division III level, these are student athletes. I mean, we say it all the time when we talk about college football, but let's be honest. These are true student athletes who are out there because they love the game, because there are no scholarships. These guys are playing football because they love it.
For sure. And in a day like that, the last 2 years, I mean, Target Field and this year, I mean, that's as incredible as it gets You know, for a rivalry that I always said, it seems like it can't get any bigger, and it finds a way to get bigger and better each and every year, it seems like. Pete, the University of Nebraska, you've known quite well over the years. Your daughter went there. You know Tom Osborne well. Take me through this 0-6 start, and some people are saying, don't worry about it because this team's for real. They're going to be good, and they're going to be good before the end of the year, and that might start this Saturday. They might start winning games. And the other theory is, how on earth could you ever be 0-6 at Nebraska?
It's unbelievable. I actually was talking to Coach Osborne the other day, and he had mentioned, he says, you know, Pete, he said, it's unfortunate. People didn't really understand just how empty the cupboard was when Scott was hired. And he thinks the fix will happen, and he thinks it'll happen relatively quickly. But he also points to, you know, Bill Snyder, when he came back to Kansas State, it took some time. It took about three seasons to get that turned. And Bill McCartney as well at Colorado to get that turned. It took a couple of years as well from a 1-10 and going and becoming an absolute monster and a national title. You know, when you combine all of that and you take a look at Nebraska, are they going to be a contender of any type this year? Absolutely not. Are they going to get to a bowl game? I think that's really highly unlikely.
You have to win six in a row, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and you've got those games in the early part of the year, you know, the September games, those are where you kind of pack the stats so that you can get into these bowl games, and
yep.
They lost those as well. And they got the one that they couldn't play because of weather. So, you know, they've had about every negative thing thrown at them that they can. And you know what? They're young, too. And it's something I hear P.J. Fleck talk about all the time is youth. Well, Nebraska's got youth. They've got an incredible number of penalties. They're turning the ball over way too much. The offense still is a pretty potent offense, but the problem is they find themselves always playing from behind. And when you've got a quarterback that's kind of a dual-threat quarterback, but probably a better runner than he is a passer in Martinez, I think that makes it tough on them. But they've done a decent job, and they've had moments where they have looked really good. I thought against Northwestern, they turned the corner, and it happened to be the same week that the Gophers looked like they turned the corner and played a heck of a ball game at Ohio State. So I think this is going to be a really interesting game down in Lincoln. And I'll tell you what, I'm sure everybody is looking for that first Big Ten win. And I know us as Gopher fans, we want it. And I'm sure that Lincoln is looking for a win at home. I think this is going to be a great game.
I don't mean to bring back bad memories, but you did play in the most infamous Gopher-Nebraska game ever. At the Dome when they won 84-13. You know, obviously it's almost impossible for that to happen. But what do you remember? I mean, like that week, did you feel like, hey, we got a chance against these guys? I mean, it's part of the beauty of being an optimist in college, but do you remember what that week was like and that night was like?
Well, I remember the preparation, and I remember that we got really pretty lucky that year that we didn't go 0-11. We actually won our first game down at Rice. And, you know, I guess this should have been a sign of the times. That was a delayed game because of lightning. So we came through, and we did get a victory against maybe if we weren't the worst team in college football that year, maybe it was Rice. But, you know, we came back, and you always have confidence. Like you said, you know, you go through practice, you feel like, you know, you're seeing guys make progress. You're looking around and you're thinking, you know what, we're better than people are saying we are. And I think you always have to have that feeling. But the reality was when we lined up there, you know, the coaching staff made some interesting decisions as well, Max. A lot of people didn't take note of this, but as a player, I can tell you, I even shook my head a little bit in meetings. And I didn't think we were going to get beat by 84-13,
right.
But at the same time, sitting in those meetings, and they really, that basically the defense we played, Maxie, was a goal line defense for the entire game.
So you were going to shut down Rozier and make him throw the ball on you?
Well, we figured we could stop Rathman and Rozier and Turner Gill.
Yeah, that's all you had to do.
With five number one draft picks on the offensive line and a really good tight end, and Jimmy Williams, and oh, by the way, Irving Fryer on the outside.
Oh, I forgot about Fryer, yeah.
I mean, they really did have it all,
and
we were limited, and we were getting injured. We got, you know, the injury started up in that game. That's when they really started that year, and including myself towards the end of the year against Michigan State, I tore up my knee. But it was an amazing season, and you know, it started off with that Nebraska game, and that was a son of a gun. I tell you what, we when I looked up at the clock, Maxie, and they'd scored 21-21, and suddenly they got 42 points at halftime. I figured, you know what, I know Coach Osborne, and I know he's going to take the foot off the pedal. And he actually did, and he started substituting it. Years later, just a couple of years ago, when he and I were sitting down talking, I looked at him and I said, Coach, what? Why did you have starters in the fourth quarter? Because I was off the field, and I looked out there, and I saw Turner Gill out there, and I saw Mike Rozier. He said, Pete, the other guys had to have IVs. They've been running up and down the field so fast. And, you know, to his credit, you know, that you can only bring so many people on the road. You can
the
only
old travel squad, yeah.
Number. Yeah, so because of that, he couldn't go to the third string and the fourth string like a home game when you've got 100 guys suited up, you know. So And I respect Coach. I loved him to death, and I had to ask him the question, and I thought that was a legitimate answer. But that was a brutal game for us, and I hope it's nothing like that for our Gophers this weekend.
Okay, so P.J. Fleck has his press conference today, and it's all about how young they are, and he wants to keep talking about the narrative for him is he wants to keep it on the freshman progress because, obviously, his record's terrible in the Big Ten since he got here, and he's trying to and I'm not blaming it all on him. I'm just saying that that's what he's trying to create here. Now, here's my question for you, and it's been asked many years in Gopher land. You're playing a lot of freshmen. I get that. Yeah. So you go, okay, then they're going to be good. But you can't compare that to other schools because there's a lot of other schools where just because a freshman is not playing doesn't mean they're not better than your freshman. Just because they're not on the field getting experience doesn't mean when they do play they won't be better than what you've got depending on your recruiting. How do you assess that part of it?
Well, you know, it's difficult. First of all, I'm not saying that PJ is using that as an excuse, but I'd rather coaches didn't talk about how young they are. Because let's be honest, you get into college football and once you're there, you are a player. And if you're a starter, welcome to the Big Ten. You have to play football at a high level. And, you know, I think what we're seeing right now is when you're young, if they make mistakes, that's one thing. But when you are, there's never any substitute for hustle and making plays. And I think the one step that I did see the Gophers make this past week at Ohio State, Maxie, was they really did step it up, I thought, on defense. Now, the previous, Big Ten games, they gave up 300 and some odd yards against Maryland on the ground. And they could give up 300-plus yards throwing the ball versus Iowa. So, I know that Ohio State threw the ball very, very well also. I mean, that guy's likely going to win or be very close to winning the Heisman Trophy by the end of the year. What did he throw for? I think something over 400 yards and three touchdowns this past week against the Gophers.
Yeah.
We did pretty well against the run, though. And I think if you're going to hang your hat on something, that's what I would say. Forget about youth. I think you have to make strides to show that you're getting tougher. And I think we showed that we're getting tougher. We're able to stop the run. Now, of course, we've got to do both. You've got to stop the run, and you still have to be back there in pass coverage. And you know, that's the one thing that did stick out to me. I wasn't, obviously like everybody else. I was watching the game on TV. But we were getting beat in the secondary pretty big. I mean, they were finding receivers. Not all the balls were thrown very well.
Right, but they were open.
They were open, and they were open by 10, 15 yards, gave them time to adjust. So that's what needs to be fixed this week because Nebraska's hungry. And watching them this past week against Northwestern, that looked like a completely different Nebraska team than we saw against Wisconsin and Michigan, where they both came out and they said, look, we are going to force our will on you. We're going to run the football. We don't even care about throwing the ball. And that was the success that Wisconsin and Michigan both had against Nebraska. And so that's something that, Minnesota's going to have to show is what can we do on defense, and are we able to stop the run? Are we going to be able to run on the Nebraska defense? That if you're looking right now for why Nebraska's 0-6, it's on that side of the football. There's not a black shirt, as they used to call them, the black shirts, the starting defense. There's not a black shirt on the field. There really isn't, Max. There's not a single one of their starting 11 who would be wearing a black shirt in any other era of football for Nebraska. Mm-hmm. So if there's a weakness, that's it, and that's what the Gophers are going to have to exploit.
Do you think Frost is a good coach?
I think he's the best coach in football. I really do. I like him. I know him. I think he's unbelievable. I saw what he was able to do down at Central Florida, but he was doing it also at Oregon. I think he's brilliant. I just think, he stepped into a situation where, and he has not brought up any excuses, by the way.
Nope.
Every week he gets up there at the press conference and he's frustrated, he's angry, he wants to win as much as anybody, but that's definitely something that I think they thought they had it this past week and they nearly did, but they stumbled. So they'll be probably licking their chops for the Gophers this weekend. So we're going to have to really show up, Maxie, or it could get interesting by the end of that game because they looked like they made the next step that they needed to make. And by the way, they ran the ball more than they passed it this past week, and I think that's a big sign as well because they can run the football. And by the way, they got a great running back over there who's averaging about 6 yards a carry in that Ozigbo. So
yeah, they got a kid named J.D. Spielman from Eden Prairie. Not bad either.
Boy, is he fun to watch. Yeah. Probably the most explosive player in college football. He reminds me of the kid out at Oregon from a few years ago. DeAndre. I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah. But I think he plays for the Kansas City Chiefs, and boy, was he exciting. That's what J.D. Spielman brings to the ballgame as well.
Now, I get one bonus business question since I've got you on. What does this Saudi Arabia thing do to the market?
You know, it's going to be something very, very interesting. I think, you know, when you look at the market, we talk about the trade wars, we talk about the Fed, and then the weakness potentially is it slowing down in China. So those are always the three topics. But Saudi Arabia's got to be something front and center as well. I've heard other guys on CNBC compare this to, well, it's similar to Turkey. It's nothing like Turkey. It's absolutely nothing like Turkey. This is a much different economy, and it's something that affects everybody globally. So it's important, Maxie, but I think that the good news right now is people are able to focus on something other than the Fed and other than China and the trade wars. They're looking at the earnings season that really kicked off this past Friday, and now we're starting to kick into it, you know, full gear really yesterday and today, and you can see the turn in the market and people starting to feel a little bit more comfortable because they're beating on earnings at a record pace. We're beating on revenue as well, which is very important. Netflix tonight absolutely crushed the number, and we've seen some of the banking numbers as well as they've come out already. Most of the banks have already reported. So earnings season is in full flow, and people are looking at that in a very positive way. That's great for the market.
Hey, Pete, appreciate it very much. Always, we'll do it again soon, I hope.
I look forward to it, Maxie. Take care, buddy.
You bet. Pete Najarian, always fun, man. What a positive energy he brings to this station and the table when we have him on. Always fun to visit with him. Jay Foreman, not far away. He played at Nebraska when they won national championships. Played in the NFL. Got a dad that was a pretty good member of the Minnesota Vikings at one time. A guy named Chuck Foreman. All that straight ahead on this edition of Sports with the Max. Stay with us. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Hit it, Shaletta. You got to let that one breathe a little bit, Shaletta. You can't just play that one, right? You got to hear it. You got to feel it. You know what gets me a little bit, Shaletta?
What's that, Mike?
So today I'm buying a license to hunt ducks in North Dakota, right?
Oh, okay.
Nothing wrong with that. It's a great transaction.
Exactly.
It's actually a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it that it's always so I says to the guy, I said, it's $100 for an out-state license, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Simple, right there on the website. It says $100 if you're a non-resident trying to buy a duck license there. That, I get that, and that's a good deal. By the time the transaction's done, it's $132.
What?
Well, because they throw on the, the activation fee and the this and the that.
Mm-hmm.
My point being, everybody throws on this processing fee, this activation fee. Mm-hmm. Well, what in the hell was included in the original $100? You know what I'm saying? One's
right.
A habitat fund that's an automatic.
Yeah.
Okay. Then what does the $100 go to,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But everybody does this. I said, somebody was telling me they're the dentist and the bill had a $15 processing fee for when they went in and did an appointment. Well, $15 for what? You're already getting paid. I'm already paying you to be here.
Yeah.
You don't get an extra $15 just because you put my name in the computer, you know?
Yeah.
Am I striking a nerve or not?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, have you ever tried to rent a car? That's the worst one.
Oh,
especially if you rent it at
the
airport.
Don't even bring it up. And nobody can even explain what the fees are.
Don't even ask them because they'll just go behind that counter and never come back out.
Never come back out. That's like Chevy Chase and planes, trains,
right.
And automobiles, man. I was in Denver one day and I'm waiting for a car, right? And the guys, there's one guy in front of me and it's taking forever because they're trying to explain all this stuff to him.
Right.
Now, I don't know that he knows me because we're in Denver, right? But
yeah.
He must have flown in from Minneapolis. Finally, he gets his stuff. He turns around. He says, Maxie, by the time you get your blankety-blank car, your vacation's going to be over. And he walks out the door. Take a break. Come back. Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCO. Time for us to fly. Mike Max, Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO, L. Malmberg coming up tonight. 9 to midnight. Joining us now, one of the good friends from days gone by, Jay Foreman. Eden Prairie High School, University of Nebraska, NFL career, doing a lot of great things. Jay, thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Always fun to visit with you. What is Nebraska like on game day as the Gophers prepare to go down to Lincoln?
Oh, well, we have the nicest fans in the nation, but it's going to be a great atmosphere for the kids that, you know, for the young guys that have never played down here. It's going to be, exciting environment, raucous, it's going to be rocking. Obviously we are not where we want to be, not even close. But I can tell you what, those fans are going to cheer as the same way as if we're, undefeated or obviously, zero wins. So I think the kids are going to get a good experience. They're going to get a team that's ready to go, and hopefully we are able to perform well. We haven't, lived up to expectations or, any type of, expectations on anybody. So we're struggling right now, but I think it's something that we'll eventually, get through.
When you first went to Nebraska, and obviously they're on the cusp of national championships at the time, what do you remember like about your first training camp? Was there just talent everywhere? What was it like down there?
It was very hard. I mean, it was something that, once you got here, you just knew the standard that was out there. You had to work hard. You had to go the extra mile, and it was extremely competitive, high intensity, as far as from a physical standpoint, from a, I guess, mental standpoint, it was just as, taxing. So for a high school kid, that's a lot to kind of wrap your head around, just because, when you're, if you think you work hard in high school, you're not even touching the surface first when you get to college. And so, Nebraska's right on the cusp of winning a national championship, just had lost to Florida State and had a good recruiting class, I guess, and expectations wanted to get there. So it was very intense, but it's something that, I think halfway through the season you kind of adapt to, and then you just look at it as one of those things that you come accustomed to, and then you just try to take it to the next level and then take it even farther and farther. And so, it becomes something of second nature, but you always were constantly trying to push yourself and to be a better football player.
I don't picture Tom Osborne as giving a big-time pep talk. Did he, or what was he like?
He did. I mean, he motivated us. He, had different goals for us, and he knew. The great thing about him is he knew how to motivate each person or each player, and he knew people. He knew what personalities would, be the lead dog, guys that would eventually be the lead dog, and guys that needed constant nurturing, and then who could do that within certain position groups. And then he motivated everybody individually or collectively as a group. He would get us, excited for the game. But we all were so competitive and had a high standard. We were ready to go just because of our, love for him, our love for a university, but then also this, we knew what we wanted to do. And we were always playing for something that was bigger than us individually. So our motivation came from a collective motivation from everybody. So we were all like a pack of wolves or whatever saying you want to use. We definitely were trying to, go out there and set the standard.
You know Scott Frost pretty well. What's he like as a coach? What do you see?
Well, he's been a coach on the field ever since he played, playing quarterback in that time, dealing with the pressure that he had to deal with and knowing and running the type of offense that we ran, which is essentially the spread right now, but in a condensed version, obviously, with the option and stuff like that. So, the decision-making was, I think more – it was more intense. It was more crucial because you had to make quicker decisions. And so, as a coach, I think he's a guy that's, along the lines of Coach Osborne, I guess. He's, very straightforward. He's approachable. He's motivating. And he loves his players. He's a very loyal guy. He knows what it takes to win, very steadfast in his beliefs when that's what you need to be in this day and time. And obviously we need it right now. And so he's everything that you want to, lead this university out of darkness. He's not a big, all about him. And he's a very team oriented guy. And then, he's willing. And one thing he does, he knows obviously all the success he had last year at UCF. He knows he couldn't do it without the players and the coaches, and so he's never shied away from giving them just as much credit as everybody's given him.
Jay, I guess I've never asked this before. Did you know you were going to play defense when you went down there? You know, and did you feel, you know, when your father is a Pro Bowl MVP candidate type like Chuck Foreman was, did you feel any pressure that you should play running back?
A little bit, but, you know, I think that they gave me, a great amount of confidence that they were going to, you know, let me go and be, you know, whatever I wanted to be. They knew I was a football player. They knew also that, you know, I could run the ball. But, look, there was a guy named Lawrence Phillips here, and so I knew
yep.
I knew that getting on the field was going to be few and far between. And
could you right away? Like, is he one of those guys you go, you watch a couple practices and you go, uh-oh?
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's a guy that when, you know, I watched him the year before in the bowl game, and he was a true freshman. And they had other guys, you know, they had Clinton Childs, Damon Banning, Amon Green came along. So, I mean, it was definitely running back at that time. And I felt like, you know, I wanted to make a name for myself. I never got to really play defense before. Also, what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to have to deal with any more of the nonsense of, you know, every run I made, if I made a 5-yard run, all Chuck Foreman would have made six.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a good thing for me never really to play defense in high school, because it was almost like I was yearning for that.
Sure.
And you know, I watched so much football with my dad. I knew the game on both sides of the ball, and so I love football. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As many times I envisioned myself scoring touchdowns in high school, I had envisions of myself, you know, playing safety or corner or whatever when I would watch, you know, Joey Browner and those guys on Sundays. And so my dad always told me, be a well-rounded football player, be a well-rounded athlete. And I was always, I came down to Nebraska, with open, you know, open eyes and open arms to be on defense. And then, you know, hey, look, I watched enough football. I was going to, you know, immerse myself into getting better. And so I knew that if I did that, I would be fine. And so it actually worked out pretty well for me.
The pro game you went on, of course, played Buffalo, Houston. What was Buffalo like? Is that a pretty good game day atmosphere as well?
It was. You know, the great thing about it was a good transition from Lincoln to Buffalo. Same fan base, rabid fan base, but then also a lot of great players up there. And one thing about it that's really good is that, you know, it's not too big of a city. And so you get there, you go to the grocery store, you get good, knowledgeable fans, respectful fans. Love Buffalo is the only show in town, or, you know, they did have the Buffalo Sabres, but Buffalo, you know, was very close to coming off 4 Super Bowl wins. We were a playoff team. I was coming from a national championship type of atmosphere, going in there with veterans. It worked out pretty well. And it was actually one of the things that was a blessing in disguise, because it helped me become a pro without all the distractions. And that's what you really need in order, in my opinion, to be successful early and often in the NFL.
So, like, you, when you watch young players, Mike Hughes just got hurt, played for Frost at Central Florida from the Vikings, first-round pick, and you see this. What is it like for those guys, that are, especially if they're playing on a good team like you experienced? What is it like for those guys? Is it easier if you're playing with a bunch of good players, or would you rather go in and get in the fire right away and make a name for yourself?
I think in this day and time, you want to get in and make your name for yourself. The one thing about, you know, the NFL and college, or, you know, for the college kids, you know, they want to play early. That's their big deal. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think the NFL, you know, the more you can play, the more you can establish yourself, can set yourself up for a long time. So it's kind of the catch-22, because, you know, you could be an okay player on a great team and be thought of in a higher light than a really good player on a crappy team in the NFL. The college is kind of like, if you can play, you know, you can go from Meatloaf State to playing for New England Patriots. You know, that's pretty much hitting the lottery. So it's a little bit different, but you got to have the mindset even in college. I'm a firm believer college football is professional sports in a business, and NFL is entertainment. And so if you understand that, how you're going into it with the right mindset, you'll generally be pretty successful early and kind of keep your mind grounded and focused, because you can't play football forever, whether it's in college or the pros.
What's your take on the success all these good quarterbacks are having this year in the NFL? Is that just the rules being loosened up, or are they better taught?
Oh, I think the rules definitely help them. I mean, you can't hit them. You can't really play defense. And so I also think that it's one of the things that helps, you know, players, you know, make that, you know, easy transition to, you know, to the NFL game. Now, it's more of a spread open type of, you know, NFL at some point in time or some, you know, some form or fashion. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I think, you know, for these guys that are having success now, let's see what happens throughout the whole season. When they play in their division the second time, they have somewhat of a book on them. They'll struggle, but then the great ones will, or the good ones are hopefully going to be turning into great, which I hope they all are, will be able to adjust and take their game to the next level. So generally what happens is the rookies, when the young guys can come in, when they haven't scouted you, can burst on the scene. That's generally what happens. But, you know, these guys, this young little crop that they have is actually pretty, really, really good. And they're all good guys. And that's one thing. They all are football gym rats, and they want to all, you know, be successful.
Well, all these new rules and obviously the late hits and trying to avoid late hits, as a defensive player, how do you see that?
Man, it'd be hard to play. I mean, I think that, you know, I think what you can do, you know, really, to be honest with you, let me start with this. The way football is played as a whole right now, as far as the essence of football, has gotten really, really bad. And what I mean by that is technique. The fundamentals is so bad, it's almost sometimes hard to watch. So then, therefore, that boils over into these new rules. So if you're not technically sound and you're not doing all the things you need to do in order to, you know, pre-snap, during, to make you a better player, you're going to have a lot of these penalties because you're actually always going out there for, you know, the big hits and all that stuff. And so it's one of those things that it's a catch-22, but as a defensive player, I wouldn't know what to do, you know, as far as playing. I mean, that strike zone that these guys have is it costs you a lot of money, and they ding you up real quick. And you know, they need to do – I understand what they're trying to do, but most of the time that they're dinging guys, it's not with the intent to hurt people. It's just that, you know, if I'm 6'2", and a 5'10 receiver comes and he crunches down coming across the middle, I don't even know where to hit him. And then you don't want to blow a guy's knee out and all that stuff. So it's a very hard thing to do at this day and age and time, because really, to be honest with you, the rules aren't very clear, because there isn't any leeway, but then there isn't any playbook on how you're trying to hit somebody, or there isn't a situation to say, okay, well, Mike Maxx came across the middle, he crunched down, or Mike Maxx, the offensive player, came with his crown of the helmet when I was trying to actually hit him, you know, in his midsection. And so then technically I hit you in your head or strike you in your head, but you were the one that was causing the initial contact. And so it's one of those things that's very, very unique, and it's hard thing to – look, these refs are out there trying to throw flags in milliseconds. But, you know, with the help of instant replay, you'd like to think that they get a, you know, little bit of leeway, go back and not ding guys up so much as far as trying to make good football plays, especially when it's a hard football play. When you look at the Clay Matthews hits,
those first, poor guy.
I mean, not only were they game-changing plays in penalties, they were financially, which, you know, Clay Matthews has obviously made a lot of money, but at the end of the day,
but still,
you know, why should he be?
Yeah, he had to give that away.
$40,000.
Yeah,
sure. And they were in the second one, I think, against the Redskins. Their third one actually got was, I don't know what else to do. What I would tell him, and it's a hard thing to go out there and play full speed, protect yourself, because everybody will tell you if you don't play full speed, that's when you get injured. And so you're putting guys at risk, and you saw a couple guys blow out their knees trying not to hurt quarterbacks.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Jay, appreciate it very much. Always good to visit with you, sir.
All right, take it easy, and go Huskers this week, right? We need one. So tell those guys to take it easy on us.
Okay, I gotcha. Jay Foreman, always great to visit with him. Former, obviously, grew up in Eden Prairie, and then Nebraska and a great career in the NFL, and his father, Chuck, wasn't too bad either. Take a break, come back, think about what you've learned so far, Shaletta, and then I want a full-scale oral report on the other side. Stay with us. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Darren Lamker will join us, Edina head football coach on their side. Ryan Sutter will give us a report. What's going on in South Dakota, you ask? He'll fill in the blanks. So I'm going to read this to you, and I want your reaction. This is a quote.
Okay.
But sometimes, you know, every once in a while you see a quote and it just grabs you.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, boy, I got to apply that to my life, or I want to share that, or whatever. You know? Here's the quote.
Okay.
Surround yourself with the dreamers and the doers, the believers and the thinkers. But most of all, surround yourself with those that see the greatness within you, even when you don't see it yourself. Edmund Lee is the author of that quote.
Mm.
Don't you think that, and I'm sure you try to do this with your kids, lots of people can't see the greatness inside them?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
And when you got somebody who can cheer you on, it can help you see it, even though you don't see it in yourself.
Yeah, and I'm amazed sometimes that those times in my life, those poignant moments when someone that I very much respected would say they see something in me that I couldn't see. I didn't know
mm-hmm.
that they even observed it, and that makes you want it even more.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think to myself, well, isn't that what we're supposed to be as parents?
Wow.
Right?
See the greatness in our kids.
Yeah. Figure it out. Help figure it out for them. I mean, that's what we're there for, right?
And then they can go on and think they can do the best that they can do, you know? Because the world is going to beat them up. We've got to build them up.
That's right. I got this friend, man, and I wish I had more time. I'll tell the story. But he had two sons. One went to Harvard and one went to Stanford. Both mm-hmm. were athletes.
Wow.
How about that?
Amazing.
Right? And I said, give me your best tip.
Mm-hmm.
He said, easy. Encourage, and encourage your kids mm-hmm. because the world will discourage enough. He said, you never have to worry about whether or not they're getting fed enough discouragement out there. They are. You don't have to worry about this. You don't have to worry about overdoing it. You mm-hmm. don't have to worry about, oh, no, I'm giving them an unrealistic look at the world. All you're really doing is offsetting what they're getting every day, you know, whether it's the commercial telling them they're not good enough, or somebody at school telling them they're not good enough, or the teacher reading the grades and they figure they're not good enough. Whatever it is, they're getting enough discouragement. You can be assured of that. During the day, your job is to pump them up and to pump their tires and give them let them know that they're unbeatable and unstoppable, because the world's going to take care of the rest for you. You don't even have to think about that.
Oh, Mike, you have slapped me in the face tonight, because my son did something at school and I was down on him, and my husband had to pull me to the side and say, hey,
chill,
love him, yeah. Encourage him, be there for him, tell
hard
him he can
do
better. It is. Yeah. It is. Well, you told me something. I'm telling you.
Yeah. I see a quote like that, and I think, isn't that it, man? It's our job
mm-hmm.
to find and unleash and encourage whatever it is inside those kids. And if we each take care of our own kids, there you go.
We're going to be a better place.
Right?
Yes, indeed.
We eliminate the problem. Plenty more to come. Darren Lamker, head coach at Edina High School, just inducted into the Augsburg Hall of Fame. They got a big showdown tomorrow night with Eden Prairie. We'll talk about that and much more. Sports the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.